This program is brought to you by Bible Way Media, overseen by the elders of the Chipman Road Church of Christ in Lee's Summit, Missouri.
Welcome to Shepherding Our Hearts with Addie Hine
and Tina Shepherd. So you remembered, but like last second.
It definitely sounded last second too. People are going to be able to know that I almost forgot.
That's okay. We've been doing it the other way a very long time, and you've been a shepherd like 20 years of your life.
And I'm 20 years old, so... what was I going to say? Oh, and I just got the title down of our podcast. It took me that long to get the name of our title down, so just hold on for dear life, because I might not ever get the name right either. That's one of the weirdest this is so off topic, but I'm going to go there anyway. I've always thought about it forever, because I'm like, someday I'm going to have kids, and they're not going to know me by, like, Addison Shepherd is going to sound so weird to them, but... that is who I am at my core. Like, that's who I know myself as. So it's weird that one day these people that are going to be around me all the time are not going to know me by that. And that just blows my mind a little bit. It's weird to think about.
And there will come a time when you will be Addie Hine longer than you were Addie Shepherd, which is kind of a neat thing.
Like, nope, never. I will always be Addie Shepherd forever.
We being your dad and I, we started dating at 17. And we always celebrate our dating anniversary, which, you know, I know a lot of people don't just celebrate the wedding anniversary.
We don't just celebrate, though, really.
What?
You just get you flowers, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's a very low-key celebration. It's not like y'all have a party.
Well, we kind of do, because it's New Year's Eve.
Well, but so, that's not for your anniversary.
What? Yes, just the whole world celebrates with us. The whole
world celebrates you.
You just burst my bubble. I really thought everyone was just celebrating us every year.
Okay. Maybe we are. I don't know. You were supposed to teach me these things.
Well, okay, so he gets me flowers every dating anniversary, but I was just going to say, so when we were 34, it was like extra special because that was half our life. So, we had been together half of our whole lives, which was kind of crazy.
I distinctly remember y'all celebrating that.
Yeah.
Which is, I was, what, 4?
Yeah.
So, that is actually insane that I remember that. Like, it was yesterday.
Yeah. So, when I remember, you were 4, then your dad and I had been together for half of our own lives.
I remember you guys talking about that, and I was like, because it hit me then that, like, someday that will be me. When I'm 34, actually.
Oh, that's amazing. You knew that you were going to find the love of your life at 17.
I did.
Or actually earlier.
I did.
But you were going to start dating him at 17.
I didn't know that. I just think it hit me at that point that I was like, someday I will also have been like with other people for longer than I've been with my family.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just because it's even weirder when you don't know who you're gonna marry yet. So at 4 years old, believe it or not, I actually didn't know who I was gonna marry yet, but like in my head I was like, I don't even know them. Like, I don't want to spend their longer with them than I have my family. Like, I love my family. It was the thoughts of a 4-year old. It was very confusing. I was like, that is traumatizing. Like, you to know, not live with my parents for the rest of my life.
Can I blow your mind just a little bit more?
Yeah.
You met the person you were going to marry 5 years after that.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Does that blow your mind just a little bit?
A lot.
When you were 4?
Well, I didn't know that, though.
No, none of us. Even when we met him.
No.
When you guys were 9, we didn't know that that was going to be the end result of all these things. But I did think about that, especially at the wedding. Sorry, now we've gone completely off topic.
It doesn't matter. It's fine.
But at the wedding, I was thinking about it because... the first year that Kian and his family came to camp, his oldest sister, Brenna, was in my cabin. And, like, I just remember the day that they showed up at camp, because I came in late because I had something going on the day that camp started. And so it was, like, I think Monday when they came. But I, like, distinctly remember meeting, like, the Hine family for the first time. And so, like, on the day of the wedding, it was all coming back because, of course, Brenna was there and, you know, her sister Kiera and, like, the, you know, just all of them. And I'm like, who knew? Well, God knew.
Well, yeah.
But, like...
nobody here knew.
It was just crazy to me that, like, the day they walked into our lives and then to know, like, now, looking at it, like, that they were going to be in our lives forever.
Getting
so
married,
kind of cool.
Getting married at camp was probably the best decision we made for our wedding, just because it was so special and it was like a really big full circle moment, since that's where we met.
An
when
actual
we were,
full circle moment.
An actual full circle moment. That's for you, Kara. just because like we met there when we were 9, and so then at 19, so 10 years later, we're getting married there. It was very special. It was probably the most special decision we made. And we talked about that. This is crazy. But within the first 3 days of us dating, I don't even think that he had talked to Dad yet. Like, we were not even officially together. Oh, yeah, we were, because it was a Sunday. So wait, he asked me out Thursday. Then Saturday, he talked to Dad. And then Sunday is when we were talking about it. And I was like, I always wanted to get married at camp. And I was like, I wanted it to be special to the person I was marrying to. And he goes, well, now it is. Which, it was probably way too early in our relationship to be talking about the fact that we were going to get married. But it worked out.
Not
it was,
really,
you
because
know.
I think, here's the thing. Because of both of your attitudes about marriage, like, and about dating, like, you weren't just flippantly dating someone.
No.
Like, both of you already had marriage in mind. And you had been friends long enough to know that, like...
That was... I mean, I knew. I was set for life. That's why it took me...
You did tell me. Can I tell this story?
Well, I don't know what story you're talking about.
I will just tell the story. And if you don't want me, then we can just back it up and you guys will never hear any of this.
I'm sure I won't care.
But no, you said to me at one point that when he asked you out...
Oh, I was actually about to say this too.
Oh, then you say
no,
it,
you go ahead.
No, it's cuter coming from
okay.
you.
So when he asked me out, he had to ask me out 3 times because I did not respond. But why I didn't respond is because I... First of all, I thought I was having, like, a fever dream. You know in movies how sometimes, like, the person, like, confesses their love for them and, like, snaps back to reality, and they did not say that at all.
They're just like, are we playing foosball or not?
And yeah, like...
What did you ask me?
I'm sorry, what? But then the second time he asked, I definitely heard him right. And, because, you know, then he said the same thing again, and I was like, this is a crazy dream. I'm just kidding, I knew. And then, but as I stood there, I was like... This is it. Like, this is the last moment I will ever be single for the rest of my life. And I think that that was the most shocking part of him asking. So then on our wedding day, like, it wasn't... I mean, it was a big deal. Trust me. It felt like a big deal then, too. But, like, kind of already knew that my single life was over. So it wasn't, like, earth-shattering that I was about to commit my life to this person. Because I already had that moment. I had had that moment 2.5 years ago when he asked me out because I knew that that was it for me.
I just think that's so cute.
Oh, should we get into our lesson?
We should. We should. It's been a long time coming. The day has been kind of full of, like
miscommunications,
turns and changes and plans and all of this, so...
She's been here since 2. It's now 4.
But I said 1, and then it was 2.
And then Kian texted, and he was like, I'll be home. But I thought he was 40 minutes away, but he was, like, 10. So he came home a lot faster than I thought. It's okay. We have made it to this point. So
we are going to talk today about the relationship between Rahab and her family.
Oh, you could tie this in.
To all the stuff we've been talking
yes.
about? Oh, for sure we can.
Yeah, we got this. Don't worry about
we
it.
We always do. All right. So Addie's going to read some verses from Joshua chapter 2.
We're going to start with verses 12 and 13. I'm assuming you didn't remember. What verses? Yeah, verses 12 and 13, and then we're going to jump down to verses 18 through 19. Yeah, so I'm going to go ahead and read those. So Joshua 2, 12 and 13 says, Now therefore I pray you, swear unto me by the Lord, since I have showed you kindness, that you will also show kindness unto my father's house, and give me a true token, and that you will save alive my father and mother, and my brethren and my sisters, and all that they have, and deliver our lives from death. Did we preface the beginning of the story and what was happening? Did we want to do that?
I can do it now.
Okay.
But basically, to recap, Rahab here...
That's the word I was looking for.
Yes, recap.
Not what I said.
Rahab had told the spies that had come into Jericho that she, you know, she was going to hide them. She did all of this. And then they were promising her that she could be safe from the... when the Israelites came in and Jericho was overtaken... And she, then the verses that Addie was reading, of course, she's asking for her family to be saved as well. So that was really our point in bringing out this relationship, is just her care and concern for her family to also be saved.
Yeah. That's, I mean, I don't really have anything else to add.
Oh, okay.
You were looking at me like that I had something to say, and I was like, uh-oh, I didn't know I needed that. Anyways, I'm going to go ahead. Are you ready for the next set of verses?
Yes, just that this is their answer to her after she asks.
Mm-hmm. Well, and now it's Joshua 2, verses 18 through 19. It looks like a really long section, and in the Bible, in this particular Bible, not just all the Bibles, but the verses aren't, like, all the way out to the left, so it just feels like it should be more than one verse, so you have to, like, really look. That's why I'm hesitating. Behold, when we come into the land, thou shalt bind this line of scarlet thread in the window, which thou didst let us down by. And thou shalt bring thy father and thy mother and thy brethren and all thy father's household home unto thee. And it shall be that whosoever shall go out of the doors of thy house into the street, his blood shall be upon his head, and we will be guiltless. And whosoever shall be with thee in the house, his blood shall be upon our head, if any hand be upon him. So basically they're like, absolutely, you can save your family, but they have to be in your home, which I think is so fair, because how are they supposed to know who's her family and who's not? You're not going to interrogate everybody that you kill. So, but also we know that her family did go and stay in the house. They also trusted her on that. They were like, absolutely.
And I just love that she, like,
thought of them.
Yeah, that was her biggest concern. It wasn't a selfish, like, I just need to make sure that I'm okay. It was a, like, please save me and my family.
Yes.
And that they were, you know, very willing to do that. Of course, it all came from God. And then, of course, they go and talk to Joshua. And, like, you know, the end of the story is that, you know, he says, yes, that is all good and well. And so they are spared, but that there are also stipulations to that, that like when she goes to tell them, you know, you can be saved from this coming, destruction of Jericho, but there are things that you have to obey. Sorry, I was tripping over my words.
It happens.
But yeah, that, you know, yes, you can be saved, but you have to do this and this and this, and you cannot alter any of that.
Which, I mean, ties in really well to the rest of the Bible, doesn't it? It's just sort of a little, what is the word I'm looking for?
Not an analogy,
like
but a
comparison almost. Mm-hmm. But that's not the word I'm looking for, but y'all know what I mean. Just of us and our salvation with Christ. He says, yes, you can be saved, but you must do this.
Well, and I mean, you have those types and anti-types. Is that the word you were looking for? Like all throughout scripture. So if you go all the way back to Genesis and with Noah.
I mean, I love them. I think they're so fascinating.
Oh, me too. And it's, I mean, it just shows the wisdom of God in all of the writing of the Bible. But yeah, you go back all the way to Noah's Ark, where, you know, there is a place for salvation, and that is the Ark. And so those eight souls who were on there, those were who were going to be saved. And here you have, there is a place of salvation from the destruction of Jericho, and that is in the home of Rahab. And so those are the people that are going to be saved. And then there's a salvation for us today.
In the church.
And those are the people that are in the church. And again.
But it's also, but I just, I don't know, I think about it all the time, like people are, well, a loving God wouldn't send me to hell because I'm not going to. Actually, we heard that while we were door knocking the other day. They were like, I believe that a loving God would not send me to hell just because I'm not going to church. Okay. But, like, say the nicest Israelite was fighting a war, right? And they had agreed to not kill Rahab's family if they were in the house. But then they left the house. Well, a loving Israelite isn't going to kill me just because I left the house. Yes, he is. Because you are not where he told you to be. So,
well, and that, I mean, is so clear in the verses that you read, the second set of verses that you read, where the spies are like, if they leave your house, like, his blood is on his head. Like, that is on him.
Exactly.
He did not keep to the stipulations that we have set. And then, yeah, if he's in the home and something happens, then that's on us. Because then we've
not. Obviously, that's not going to happen in the Bible. No, that's obviously not going to happen, like, with God. He's not going to save you if you are in his church. But
I mean, all throughout. And
I think I said that wrong. Did I say that wrong?
I don't know.
Y'all, do we need to check it? No, it's okay.
Okay.
God will save the people in his church.
There you go.
I don't know if I messed that up earlier. Just don't listen to it. I just was sitting here and I was like, I'm pretty sure I think I said, I think I might have said, God will not save the people in his church. Oh. I think I might have accidentally slipped the word not in there, and I did not mean to do that.
That does change the meaning of a sentence.
It does, and you just agreed with me, and then I was like, I don't know that that was right. I don't know that I said what I meant.
It is dangerous sometimes because you hear what you think you are saying as opposed to what you're actually saying, you know, like because you intend to say one thing. But.
Yeah, but then I wanted to. Oh my goodness.
Clarify.
Yeah, I was about to say, I cannot speak today.
So we've been studying, we being Wyatt and I, have been studying through some of the minor prophets. And it's so clear over and over and over that God always sets his expectations and then
he expects you to follow his expectations.
But and each time he also sets what judgment will be.
Yeah, what the consequences are.
Yes, and so like all through the Old Testament you see it over and over and over and over again where he, you know, makes the statement like, if you will obey my words, then I will be your God and you will be my people.
It's always an if-then statement.
Yeah, but if not, then...
The positive and the negative.
Yeah.
Both of it. It's always if-then. Because, you know, it makes me think of Romans 6:23, where it says, for the wages of sin is death, but the gift of God is...
eternal life. Through Jesus Christ.
We randomly looked back down at the computer. It said it had stopped recording, and I was like, oh, that's so strange. And so then we started again, but I said that verse right.
The first time. It's fine.
But now I'm irritated because now I sound ridiculous. Like, I don't know what I'm talking about, and I just quoted the verse.
You were just flustered because now we had to, like, think about what points we still needed to make.
That's okay. It's fine.
All in all, the cool thing is that Rahab thought of her family and she wanted to save them. But she then had to like tell them what those stipulations and stuff were. And so
and they had to trust her on that. I mean, to be fair though, somebody was like, hey, somebody's gonna come fight a war, but if you're gonna be in my house, you're gonna be safe. I'd be like,
I'll be there. But now? Can I come now?
If you're not, like, even if you're wrong about this, doesn't matter. I'll come stay at your house. That's fine.
Also, though, they had some notice because the Israelites were going to march around the city for 7 days.
That's true. They had a week to get there.
So,
do you think they were there the whole week?
Yeah, because they probably didn't know what the plan was. So I'm imagining the first time they saw them marching towards the city, they'd be like, "And I'm marching myself over Rahab's.
Rahab, I'm coming.
I'll be right there." But just the love and care that she had for them, and to think of them, and to invite them, which you know, so many times we don't take that opportunity to invite those we love to, you know, learn about what they need to do to be saved, you know, on a spiritual level.
Do you think that was embarrassing for her? Like, oh, what if they don't believe me? Like, what if they think that I'm lying, you know, like we do sometimes today?
Yeah, I'm going to say that she seems like she was a pretty bold person.
She was like, well, I love you guys, and I don't want you to get killed.
Yeah, so I would guess no, but obviously we don't know much about her. But
maybe
her boldness
from that.
Yeah, her boldness in saving the spies to begin with, and her boldness to ask the spies for a favor. Like,
yeah, can you imagine? I'd be like, thank you for not killing me.
Yeah, I mean, but again, she had such faith by seeing all of what God had done for the Israelites and hearing about, like, all of the things. Like, she had more faith than some of the Israelites probably that were traveling along and just kept whining about,
probably.
Like, why did God bring us out here to die?
I mean,
like,
she
Rahab...
She ended up in the lineage of Christ.
Yeah, Rahab was like, no, guys, God.
This is real.
It's God. So, I think that's all I have. But
I think me too, but I really liked this.
I did too. I really love studying about Rahab.
I do like Rahab a lot.
So.
All right. Well, do we say thank you?
Thank you.
We thank you for joining us today. We hope you have enjoyed this program. You can find out more about Bibleway Media by visiting us at BibleWayMedia.org. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can find all of our podcasts on all major podcast platforms. As always, we thank you for listening.